rushes and dribbles, whirls and it ripples. Water, 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 water. It's wet and it's quenching, drippy and drenching, rinsy and refreshing. Water, water, water. Lapping and whirling, crashing and curling. Water, 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 water. Rushing and runny, fizzy and funny, yucky or yummy.
Yesterday, September 18th, the press conference was held here in Chico, sponsored by Aqua Alliance, the California Sports Fishing Protection Alliance, the California Water Impact Network, and the California Indian Water Commission. Their press release began, "Strong Coalition challenges state tunnels financing. State validation process would allow bond measures to move forward without detailed plans, clear financing responsibility, or completed environmental review."
And this morning's Chico Enterprise Record had a front page story by Associated Press reporters Alan Nickmeyer and Scott Smith with the headline, "State says no choice in paying for tunnels, argues they are an update rather than a new project."
So both of these refer to the so-called Water Fix project that would build the twin tunnels under the Sacramento Delta. This is, of course, it's been one of Jerry Brown's ambitions ever since his first term as governor, and the citizens voted down his peripheral canal project.
With us tonight to help understand these goings-on, which also involve the Department of Water Resources, the group that has responsibility for the Oroville Dam, is Barbara Vlamis. She's Executive Director of Aqua Alliance, and we again appreciate having you on Ecotopia. Thanks for coming in.
I appreciate you having me very much.
These are really complex issues and questions, and we're going to ask you to clarify some things for us. But I also would think this will really help our listeners in understanding what the twin tunnels are about and some of the, if I may express an opinion, the skullduggery that's going on trying to get them put through by Jerry Brown at all costs, any cost. So let's start. You're filing a lawsuit. Against whom is it being filed, and what's the purpose?
Let's start with the press conference.
I'm sorry, I thought that, yes, okay. Let's start with the press conference.
Okay. I'll start off by, expressing my appreciation that we have a new partner.
Yes.
Your listeners may recall that we have filed other lawsuits with the California Sport Fishing Protection Alliance, that I'll refer to as CSPA for short, and the California Water Impact Network, CWIN. And while I am deeply appreciative that the three of us hang together and we do these lawsuits together, it was fascinating to be contacted by the California Indian Water Commission, and I'm thrilled that they have been able to join us in this litigation. They are a new player in this dastardly project, and they bring strength that we non-governmental organizations bring geographic relevance as well as our expertise in environmental laws. But no one else besides the California Native peoples have the longest history with water and land in the state. And so having them join us brings a great deal of clout to this and probably other processes if we continue to work together. So we're quite pleased and honored to have them as partners in this lawsuit.
I think you mentioned that there have been some court decisions that give priority to Native American water rights over even some of the senior water, the folks who came in the 1850s.
Absolutely. There's a significant case that was just, that was published in the recent past by the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, upholding not only the surface water entitlement to the Agua Caliente band in Southern California, but their right to groundwater.
Mm-hmm.
It was huge. Important. Very huge case. So the press conference, I'll segue back to that. It was also nice to have with us. We had Randy Hankins, who is the president of the commission, and another representative with us. And we had a good crowd. We had about 20 people with us.
Right.
And we were there promptly, and the reporter, a new reporter, nicely, from the News and Review showed up. So we were friendly and chatting with him while we waited for other people, and then noticed no one else had come. So we went, well, I started making a few phone calls and found that the TV media, there were a few mix-ups, but it's like, okay, well, we'll give that some time, but let's put on the press conference for this nice young fellow from New York. So we did. And he's, like I said, a new reporter at the News and Review. And it was good. And he took pictures and asked us questions, and it was all appropriate. And then I made another call, and I thought, well, they're going to try, but we're going to have to kill some time. And most people left. But others of us went to Upper Crust to, you know, have a coffee and a little something. And lo and behold, ABC News from Reading caught up with us at Upper Crust. And it was actually great that it happened this way. So, you know, something that looked like, well, maybe it's going to be a limited press conference. This turned out so well. This nice young woman came and bought a coffee, and we sat down. I said, what do you know about the Twin Tunnel? She goes, nothing. Explain it to me.
Oh, nice.
So here we could sit calmly and talk about it without just instantly going into an interview.
Mm-hmm.
And so we did that for about 20 minutes and then went over to Children's Park and did a little video that broadcast, and it's online.
Oh, good.
At krcrtv.com. And then I tried calling our local TV to see if they were sending someone. Then lo and behold, they were coming from 12 and 24. So NBC, CBS affiliates. And we went back and we met them near Bidwell Mansion and did an interview there. And so anyway, I called it a phased press conference.
Really.
Right.
Didn't happen the way they normally happen, but I figured, well, you know, we do a lot of things kind of by the seat of our pants when you're a small nonprofit, and we're a small market, so we all need to be flexible. So
we'll consider this to be the tail end of the press conference.
On and on and on.
So I was pleased and appreciative of the media that came.
Why? Explain the timing for the press conference that you held all day long yesterday.
Yeah, all 3 hours. It was about this lawsuit, this validation lawsuit that was actually filed by DWR in July, and we had 60 days to respond. We're the defendants. I mean, I'm not used to being a defendant. I'm used to being the plaintiff. But the way these, and I'll read something maybe to help all of you and your listeners.
Yeah, listen to this. It's like, I was thinking of it today as like a double negative. It goes the wrong way.
It goes the wrong way. Yeah. And we are responding to their lawsuit on validating these bonds. And then after I explain a little bit, I'll read some clarifying paragraphs. And we and CSPA, CWIN, and the California Indian Water Commission are the respondents to this claim by DWR that they have the right, the legal right, to issue these bonds for the Twin Tunnels, which is also known as the Water Fix.
So, in responding, were you being sued in the validation process, or did you choose to put yourself into the situation where you would be the recipients?
Kind of both.
Okay.
When an entity sues for a validation claim, they are technically suing everyone, and everyone has the opportunity, if they so choose, to respond.
Okay.
So we chose to, and we know that we represent many hundreds of people from the North State, so we're suing on behalf of our members as well as we think of the general public up here to try to protect the interests of the people up here. Now, you want me to read
bit about the validation process?
Yeah. The state put out a very short kind of cheat sheet on validation actions in public finance. And I'll read just a couple of paragraphs because I think that's sufficient to explain to the level we need to know. Validation procedures have long enabled public entities to confirm the legality of various actions, including contractual agreements and the issuance of public debt. To validate these actions, the public entity, in effect, sues all persons deemed to be interested in the matter. At the heart of the court's decision is a determination that the actions are allowable under existing law and thus valid, or not, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
The court could also find the actions of a public agency to be invalid. This possibility provides private citizens, as well as other public entities, the opportunity to challenge certain public transactions, including some contracts and bonds, by seeking validation of those transactions. In either case, the validation process intends to eliminate uncertainty by obtaining a judicial determination of the validity of the transaction based on the existing law. In the context of a bond issue, a validation serves to remove from the pricing equation the uncertainty regarding the validity of the transaction.
So, what you're objecting to, you said, your press release yesterday said that the state is asking for $11 billion in bonds without identifying the sources of revenue or indicating how total costs will be shared with the Central Valley Project, its federal partner in the Water Fix.
Mm-hmm.
So that's your objection that they're suing you for having.
yeah, apparently.
Right.
Okay, so
yeah. And what's interesting is they've filed this on the same day that they filed their notice of determination on the CEQA case, the environmental review. The CEQA case, you know, we had 30 days to respond. The validation, you have 60. So we've been really busy in the last 60 days. First, you had to deal with the first lawsuit, the environmental review case. And then we had to, the next 30 days, now we have to do the validation action.
Let me just clarify the CEQA one. We talked about that about a month ago.
Mm-hmm.
And that was where, in effect, Jerry Brown accepted the environmental impact statements that have been submitted in conjunction with the Delta Project and the Water Fix, and then it's speak your piece or forever hold your peace kind of thing. If you don't step in
and within 30 days
mm-hmm. object to it, then it goes on without any further recourse.
Exactly, it's done.
Yeah.
Now the thing in bringing up the date and wanting to remind your listeners of the CEQA case as well is that in these last 2 months, and particularly in the last 2 to 3 weeks, there's been just this flurry of media reports and things that I'm seeing that end up being part of, you know, from some of my colleagues, things they're digging up from Public Records Acts, things mm-hmm. by reviewing minutes from certain entities that are supposed to vote on these, whether they're in or they're out with the tunnels. And like you said, the article today. So there's a great deal of consternation, quite clearly, about the funding of this thing ever since they filed this validation case in July.
Is this the time to share your breaking news?
Well, it might be.
Because it seems really important about the financing.
It is. Well, we knew that today that Westlands Water District and possibly the Santa Clara Water Agency as well, their boards might vote whether or not they're in.
Means to share the funding, whether they're in and willing to be
their share, because they're the beneficiaries, of the beneficiaries.
Right.
Metropolitan Water District is supposed to vote either later in the month or early October, the other big gorilla. So anyway, Westlands Board held a meeting today and voted no. Now, that is huge news that the biggest agricultural district in the United States voted, after years of having DWR spend money, millions of dollars, on environmental review and public meetings and testing and engineering and blah, blah, you go on and on, is now bailing. Wow.
Yeah,
there are multiple ways to look at it. Are they truly bailing, or is this a ploy?
A negotiation ploy,
Is this a chess game going underway?
Add to that, in the ER article this morning, there was a lot of saber rattling going on, saying, well, the water project has the right to make these folks pay. If they do not pay, then after their current contracts expire, no more water for them.
Yeah, one would call that a threat.
Yes. I would call that a threat.
Exactly, and since we're in Butte County, I'll use Butte County as an example. Yeah. Butte County is a state water project contractor. They receive some water from the state for hosting the dam. That's how they received that entitlement. Now, anything that's built south of here is not going to benefit this region. You do not have to have a degree in rocket science to figure that out. And so Butte County, for years, has said they aren't participating. They aren't going to pay for the water fix. Why should they? They don't benefit. And, you know, there are other entities that either have or may, you know, have been talking quietly. You know, Santa Barbara, which has been taken to the cleaners for its participation in the state water project, you know, also has expressed disinterest in being a participant. So these latest threats, like I said, that are in the paper now, are very interesting. As you know, as these agencies are, you know, we're reaching the crescendo of the voting, and for Westlands to be the first one to declare no is fascinating. But again, I am not sure if this is just part of this chess game that is.
And so the chess game involves, we've got to figure out how to pay for this, and that's how we got to this bond issue.
Yes.
That they're now saying they need, they're selling bonds in order to build this. Who are they wanting to buy bonds to finance this?
Well, it's supposed to be, as everyone understood it, including Butte County, who, like I said, is one of the 29 state water project contractors, but one, albeit, that will not benefit, you know, is the beneficiaries are supposed to pay. I mean, that seems obvious. Why should the public pay for something they don't benefit from?
And apparently don't want.
And lots of entities apparently don't want. As I've mentioned before to your listeners, the push is on, though, to get this done while Jerry Brown is in office.
Right.
Jerry Brown, this is a legacy project for his family, not just for himself. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure he is very worried, because the top two candidates from the Democratic Party, which is usually, you know, the Democratic Party is pretty strong in California. The top two candidates have come out against the tunnels.
Right.
So he feels compelled to get all the permitting and everything in place so that it would be much harder to unravel for another governor coming in after 2018.
Let's talk dollars and cents for just a moment. The project estimate likely unreliable is that the project would cost $15 billion, though I've heard figures up in the neighborhood of $40 to $50 billion by the time you get through. Nevertheless, they're trying to raise $15 billion. The bonds would be for $11 billion, which is, I think you said, would pay for about 56% of the project.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The rest would come from direct contributions then from the...
They don't know where the rest is coming from. It's because, an unknown donation source.
Okay, so the donations of outfits like Westland then would go to pay off the $11 billion in bonds,
mm-hmm.
leaving $600-700 billion
You know, they're supposed to pay... I think Westland's share is like 25% of the cost. And while... You know, the state has floated this $15 billion price tag for so long. Economists, one Jeffrey Michael from the University of the Pacific, did his own analysis because projects like this are notorious, number one, for having cost overruns.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
And then there's interest and all these other things. And so his figures are in the $60 to $70 billion dollars. So even when we're talking about the $15 billion, we're talking about a fraction of the total potential for the cost for this project.
Let's also factor in the news very recently was that the Bureau of Reclamation, unbeknownst to we the people, had kicked in, I think it was $85 million toward the engineering studies for this project.
Mm-hmm.
And again, these monies were not revealed. Why is the Bureau of Reclamation giving money to the California Water Project, to the DWR for this project? And who authorized that?
Did you hear me
Who
sigh?
Said they could do that?
I tried to kind of keep it quiet.
Right.
I had to let some air out of my lungs. Can I come back to that? It occurred to me, if we have a new listener on, they may be going, Twin Tunnels Water Fix, what are you talking about, people?
Good.
May I just state that the Twin Tunnels are a project put forward first by Arnold Schwarzenegger when he was governor. He floated back the peripheral canal as, let's bring back the peripheral canal that was shot down in 82 by the voters. As he left office, he handed that off to Jerry Brown, and it quickly segued into tunnels. Let's put them underground.
And let me jump in and clarify. Canals and the tunnels would take water from the north of the Sacramento Delta, right out of the Sacramento River, bypass the Delta.
I was going to get to that.
Okay.
Yes. Because one of the things I want to get to is the tunnels or the canal, as they once thought of it, would start just south of Sacramento, and they would go around the Delta 35 miles. The tunnels are designed to be 40 feet in diameter, so imagine a four-story building tall and a four-story building wide each, okay, running 35 miles underground.
How many tunnels?
Two of them.
Two.
And they could divert up to two-thirds of the average annual flow of the Sacramento River, a massive amount of water.
And how do they justify that in terms of maintaining the Delta?
Well, they and Governor Brown have repeatedly said that this is going to help the Delta.
I know they've said that.
How do they back it up?
What's their reasoning?
Well,
that?
They say they're going to do all this mitigation. They're going to restore all these wetlands. They're going to do all these. Well, wetlands don't provide flow. I mean, they're wonderful and helpful for birds, and restoring some of the wetlands in the Delta is a good thing, but that doesn't provide flow. And that's one of the things, of course, that we've brought up. And so when you press them about it, they struggle, other than to say, we have to do it because there are threats from earthquakes. We're going to do all this mitigation of restoring these wetlands and everything. The Delta is going to be a better place. And you go, how could it be better if you take two-thirds of the flow out of it?
Where is that water going to come from?
Where is it going to come from? Our groundwater.
This
is where we really upset them, and we may discuss it if we get to the State Water Board process. This is where we really tangled with them over it. But they have hidden the source of the water mm-hmm. that is going to provide this flow. Unless you look really, really carefully in their 80,000 pages of documents, you would not believe the volume of material they threw at the public, as if the public can possibly process 80,000 pages. But that is what we had to try to deal with to get to our CEQA action that we talked about mm-hmm. earlier.
Right.
So anyway, a little background for maybe listeners that weren't mm-hmm. aware of, of what the tunnels were, but now I think I've lost where we started before that.
We were talking about the money to pay for the whole thing. I'll just add that there have been also statements from the state, as it's sometimes called, but really DWR, saying, mm-hmm. well, we would never suck the Sacramento River dry. We would never use those tunnels to full capacity, maybe in an emergency.
And what do they do all the time? What have they done to the San Joaquin River? It runs backwards. It's so dry.
Right.
I mean, their past behavior, state and federal government's past behavior, demonstrates you can't trust them with anything. And albeit an awful calamity for the people that had to flee Oroville and downstream, I am glad that from that disaster, people now realize what a corrupt agency DWR
is.
Yeah. And what they prioritize. And they prioritize what their contractors and the governors want. And it is not, it's clearly not public safety.
And we talked about this before, but I think this is something else that needs clarification. You've told us what the relationship is between DWR and the rest of the water world. And as I remember it, DWR has kind of grown in power since its establishment. Who established it, and why do they have so much power?
Well, it started under another name in the 50s.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and as the Californians approved bonds to build the state water project, which, you know, starts at Oroville, you know, and that's considered the jewel of the state water project, and that's how they treat it. You know, they neglect it. They don't maintain
yeah, right.
it.
Right.
That's how it started. And you know, the goal was at that time to provide flood control and also to move some water south of the Delta. Well, to a lot of people, the moving of the water has become the primary purpose,
right.
and the flood control has taken a major back seat, which they were supposed to be, you know, equal partners here in the creation of Oroville Dam. The other thing, too, though, is they were so ambitious in the 60s. I mean, this was when we had lots of fish. It looked like we had lots of water. And they, you know, we want Southern California to keep growing forever, so let's get them more water. They were supposed to put all of the coastal rivers, shunt them over to the Sacramento
mm-hmm.
River.
Mm-hmm.
So the coastal rivers were supposed to be part of it, where more of this water was supposed to come from. And who was the hero that stopped that? Lo and behold, it was Ronald Reagan.
Mm.
He was invited by a friend to come up and fish on the rivers up there when he was governor of California, and went, well, we can't destroy these. Mm. And he started the California Wild and Scenic Act
mm-hmm.
and protected them that way. And when he was president, he did it again with the federal law. So the Trinity, sadly, had already been routed over. And we can see the results of another debacle, you know, fish declining to precipitous levels. Anyway, the State Water Project, you know, was supposed to be this glorious economic thing, help, you know, stop flooding and disasters in that way. You know, it sounds good. It always sounds good. It's one of the reasons people in California still pass all these water bonds, but they don't really know what's in them. And some of the pieces of them are awful.
Mm-hmm.
But does that help with
yes,
a little
absolutely.
Background on the yeah. State Water Project?
Right. So going back to the tunnels and the funding of the tunnels, who's going to pay for them if they can't pass these bonds? And where is that, in your opinion, where is that 45% of the funding that's still required going to come from?
Well, from some of the reports that have come out, as I mentioned, in the last two or three weeks, it almost looks like DWR is starting to state that this really isn't a new project. And therefore, you know, it's the people of California that may be on the hook. And I hope that there is going to be a hue and cry in that regard, because the citizens of California are not going to benefit from this massive infrastructure project.
This is Ecotopia on KZFR. We're talking with Barbara Vlamis, the executive director of Aqua Alliance, about a press conference held yesterday, a lawsuit that will be filed, one of many that Aqua Alliance and others have filed in recent years, over not only the twin tunnels, but over water transfers from our area, and getting involved with the Oroville Dam, some of the issues that we've faced there. We'll take a little break, and then we want to come back and talk very specifically about some of the reasons why you think the proposal for waiving validation should be defeated.
Or accepted.
There we go. Pat Funkin.
That's why. Yeah. One little river goes into one bigger, into the sea. Water, water, water holds us all together, bringing life wherever it goes. Where the water flows,
where the water flows,
where the water flows,
where the water flows,
high up in the sky,
high up in the sky,
or in the ground way down below,
or in the ground way down below,
or from the mountains to the valley,
from the mountains to the valley,
into the sea,
into the sea.
There's a watershed,
there's a watershed,
wherever you may be,
wherever you may be.
One little river goes into one bigger, into the sea it flows. Water, water, water holds us all together, bringing life wherever it goes. And there's a watershed,
there's a watershed,
we should all get to know,
we should all get to know.
But there's a watershed,
there's a watershed,
where the water flows,
there's a water flows,
there's a watershed,
there's a watershed,
we should all get to know,
we should all get to know.
But there's a watershed,
there's a watershed,
where the water flows,
where the water flows.
One little river goes into one bigger, in the sea it flows. Water, water, water holds us all together, bringing life wherever it goes.
You are listening to Ecotopia on KZFR. We're talking with Barbara Vlamis, the executive director of Aqua Alliance, which is involved in protecting Northern California waters. Barbara, you sent us a document along with the press release. It's called A Response and Answer to Complaint for Validation. This was filed by attorneys from a number of public agencies. This is essentially the response of concerned citizens and local governments and agencies to the water DWR's attempt to get the bonds pushed through without public approval. We found it a fascinating document. You mentioned that it'll be up on your website. It's about a 40-page document, and it includes great information on the history of the whole water project approval in California dating back to 1933. We thought we'd spend a few minutes talking about the response, which contains a number of arguments against the entire water fix project. And perhaps you could help us understand. These are really the grounds for rejection of the DWR's lawsuit. One that particularly caught my eye was that tucked away in the lawsuit or the proposal for the bonds is that this would be a 70-year authorization, pretty much open-ended, which includes unrestricted freedom to make necessary improvements or replacements. So we're not just talking about building the tunnels, but a kind of a 70 years of DWR doing whatever it wants to do in the name of repair and replacement.
Apparently. And here's another statement that I just find so egregious, again, coming out of this response to DWR's validation lawsuit, is that DWR shall charge and collect amounts for construction or acquisition without regard to whether or not the department is able to construct, acquire, or operate the California Water Fix. I mean, the foundation for a project is being exempted right from the beginning.
Right.
It just builds on what you just said. Mm-hmm. It's just astonishing. And, I mean, the state bureaucracy that is fueling this project at the behest of Governor Brown must think we all just rolled off the turnip truck yesterday. No. I mean, this is appalling. No. And that's why, yes, this response is so thorough. I thought that we, of course, submitted our own. Ours is not as thorough, but we were able to get in our complaint. And that was the main thing.
We had a question about the relationship between the two documents.
Right. Ours is not as thorough, so for background, I thought it would benefit you to read it. But
but
rest assured, our response is in so that we can deal with these same issues.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very odd process. And so
yes.
Anyway,
there still aren't clear engineering plans. Is that correct?
There aren't clear engineering plans. You know, their partner in this has not even finalized their environmental document, the Bureau of Reclamation. Without doing that, there's not a secure project description. We have no idea the ending project description. But again, all of this is being driven by Jerry Brown's timeline. And so it's almost to the point of hysteria.
It really is. They're just like, ah!
Yeah, I think so. So, anyway, it's one more piece. Now there's another piece, if I may make the leap. There's another piece, and we spoke to our colleagues at the California Indian Water Commission, Trina Cunningham and Don Hankins, who also participated in our press conference yesterday, the colleagues we are so proud to have with us, about this process before the State Water Board. You may recall that there is a part one and part two phases. There are one and two phases to this. And what this is the agencies, DWR and the Bureau, must file with the State Water Board for a change where they're going to divert the water. And that kicks in this whole legal process where the first part was they are not allowed to harm another legal user of water. And that was the part that we participated in. Jim and I were down there December 1st, 2015, testifying, as well as in advance of that, we had submitted our testimony in writing. Phase two is coming, where we will be addressing impacts to the public trust, right, and impacts to fish and wildlife, and impacts to the public interest. And that it will start in January of 2017. Again, they're pushing this because I must tell you, there's been a flurry of activity with lawyers from water districts to environmental groups saying you cannot move forward until we have a solid project description. And if the Bureau of Reclamation won't do it, you have to delay this process. And they reversed a decision. I mean, this is how desperate they're getting. The Water Board had made it clear that that was a requirement.
Right.
They have now reversed that decision. The Bureau does not have to come up with a final document. So we don't even have a clear picture of what we're responding to in the validation case or what will turn into a federal lawsuit down the road. Mm-hmm. We don't have it, though, for this process, which is where we need to present how these tunnels would affect. We already did the public's, you know, the mm-hmm. individual water rights. Now it's down to the public interest, trust, and fish and wildlife. So, I mean, it's astonishing, but they are trying to get around every hurdle that is in their path. Mm-hmm. And some of it even comes from the legislature, and that is in this complaint, the validation thing that's in this complaint, too.
So what is the legislature?
Well, again, you know, it's up to us to point out the inconsistencies.
Right.
And what we hope to do before the State Water Board is we will represent, as we did before, this region, the Sacramento River region. And we will talk about how if they use the amount of groundwater from this region that is so dependent on its healthy groundwater basins for its communities, for individual well owners, for farming, groundwater-dependent farming, and to support our streams that supports our fish and wildlife. And the urban canopy here in Chico, our Bidwell Park, our glorious canopy in Bidwell Park, you know, that would all go away. And that this is not, you know, pie in the sky. The San Joaquin Valley used to have trees,
right?
You know, in a riparian zone along its river. Now it doesn't have a river. It doesn't have riparian habitat. Their oak trees are gone. I mean, this is what happens when you dewater a region. And so we will be down there next year, very early next year, again, under this racing, you know, clock that has to be met to finish this, the approvals before Governor Brown is out of office, representing this region in that regard.
So what do you see as the timeline for how all of this will happen? Is this something that evidently they are pushing really hard to get this now?
Right. And now, right now, we have until October 13th to put forth our named witnesses that will testify before the State Water Board, and we are hoping that our new colleague may participate with us. Then after that, we have by November 30th, we have to have all our written material in so that they can start the hearings formally in the middle of January 2018.
And so the things that the adverse effects on the counties and the failure to consult with them, 70 years open-ended authorization, unrestricted freedom to make changes or replacements, lack of upkeep and maintenance plans, property tax exemptions, lack of operational details, changing the ecology of the Delta, not a clear environmental impact report or statement, no mitigation plans, no voter authorization, and okay, so those are the bunch of things that are in there. All of that has to be in place in October and November. As far as they're concerned,
they believe they have met their obligation. Yeah. I mean, that's why DWR could approve their environmental impact report. I mean, an entity doesn't approve something unless they're saying this is my final shot at it. So their environmental impact report, they already approved it. Filing this validation action, they're asserting that they're free to go move forward. They're claiming that they meet the law as they see it, you know, whether or not hundreds of other entities and people don't. And then before the State Water Board, again, when you have an agency that's reversing their decisions to allow this thing to careen forward, I mean, we're in the soup right now, and there's no time to slow down. We just have to respond.
Who appoints the State Water Board? That's a political
appointment. The governor.
Yeah. So, so there would be some hope that a new governor who opposes the twin tunnels might make some changes. It's like changing out the Supreme Court, and you hope for a favorable court.
But I want to, what you're presenting in October and November, mm-hmm. is it that kind of evidence?
That kind of thing is going to stay more in the CEQA and validation lawsuits.
All right. Okay.
What we are going to present is how these tunnels could destroy the public trust, water, and the fish and wildlife of both watersheds, but Aqua Alliance is focused on the Sacramento River watershed.
Okay, I understand.
Yeah.
And so where will these decisions be made? What court will be overseeing this?
It's held before an agency, the State Water Resources Control Board. They hold hearings, but it is quasi-judicial. And you give sworn testimony, you may cross-examine people, and you may be cross-examined. So you may call witnesses. And so it's a very, very important proceeding, and it's happening in Sacramento at the State Water Board room on I Street. And it is videotaped, and it's fascinating to watch some of it, those of you that aren't able to, of course, go to Sacramento, and I certainly couldn't either, but I do watch it on occasion, especially when I know particular speakers are presenting. But fortunately, we also have an attorney who is monitoring this for us. It's one of the reasons it's so important to have public support so that we can have that eye there for us and the public.
Tell us more about public support. What kinds of avenues are open to us? We've talked in the past. Aqua Alliance, we know, is paid for by public contributions and public support. And we on this program have regularly urged people to contribute to Aqua Alliance. You can go online, aqualliance.net. There's a button for donation. So one thing we can do is help to contribute to your costs. Could you talk a little bit more about how you manage those and whether there are other avenues that concerned people can follow to really get their voices back in this process, their votes back?
You know, the sad thing, and I was just speaking with a good group of women I've known since I was 19 years old that I played softball with in this town, and they were equally worked up and wanted to know how they could help. And I said, well, one of the ways is to support the organizations that are fighting on your behalf. But I understand, it's like they almost want to go out and picket, or
right.
they want to do something with energy. And what's unfortunate is these complex processes don't allow it, really.
No,
it's really the public is precluded from that kind of participation. And Jerry Brown and the legislature made it very clear that the public was not going to be allowed to even vote on these tunnels. He lost the vote for the peripheral canal in 1982 and was never going back to that again. And so that's, you know, obviously one of the places the public normally can have a say. Obviously, you know, the next gubernatorial election, that's there, but the immediate things are really to support the groups that you know are fighting for you, whether it's through donations, whether it's through volunteering, whether you have a skill or a talent you will bring to bear. Those are the ways that the public can help.
And again, you can go online, aqualliance.net. You can read about their programs, learn more about these specific cases. Barbara, as always, we thank you for being with us on Ecotopia, and even more for the incredible work you do. Every time you come on the show, we say, wow, we can't even begin to appreciate the complexity and the amount of work that you and others in Aqua Alliance put into this cause on our behalf. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Well,
thank you.
It is a privilege to be here, and you do such a wonderful job giving us the forum to try to get the word out to the public. Mm-hmm. I really appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. Our guest has been Barbara Vlema. She is the executive director of Aqua Alliance. Please support Aqua Alliance. The opinions voiced on this program don't represent other people, but they represent
ours.
Ours, the hosts of this show.
Weave me the sunshine out of the forest.